Yeah, well, my name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a believer in Jesus Christ, and I know a lot of you guys. It's good to be here. And this is one of those nights, you know, where we're not going to have testimony. I'm going to say a little something to you, and I learned about that about 2 hours ago. So, you know, you get what you pay for. You know, so, I'm like, let's just hope I don't show up and the Holy Spirit makes a showing. You know, I want to tell you something. That was wonderful, Dice's singing. It just amazes me because I don't really talk to Dice about what he's going to, the songs are he's going to pick out and what he's going to say. And it just fits in with a lot of what I want to talk about tonight. I love the songs that you chose, and I think one of the songs, I hope I get this lyric right, I probably don't, you know, I'm 61 years old, and I got to say something, I don't remember anything that happened 2 minutes ago, but I mean, I just got real short-term memory, which really helps with the one day at a time thing, quite frankly. It's very hard for me to get a resentment because I just don't remember, which is a good thing, the Lord blessed me that way, but man, I used to have a long memory about those resentments, I just can't get up the energy, but one of the lyrics I think I heard, or something close to that, it says, blessed be your name in the road marked with suffering. Was that a lyric I heard? Blessed be your name in a road marked with suffering. Well, I'll tell you, that might be the title of this deal. Blessed be your name. You know, when Alcoholics Anonymous was started, I'm an alcoholic. But I mean, there's other addictions there. There's other, you know, once you get rid of that, I haven't had found necessary to drink in almost 30 years, since January 17th, 1981. But, you know, after you get rid of the alcohol, you discover there's a few other things. You're just not yet ready to sprout wings. There's some other stuff going on. There's a lot of other addictions. You know, I think it was John Calvin that said the human heart is a factory of idols. A lot of things to be addicted to and to idolize. You know, you can get involved in idolizing people and money and a lot of other things. But I was brought up in this deal that we're in now. I started my journey in Alcoholics Anonymous, which they say is secular, but it's really not. I know the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. The thing is all is shot through with the Lord, and essentially, to me, it's a commentary on the Bible. You know, in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Times, in 1935, Alcoholics Anonymous was started. I'll get into a little history here. And in 1939, they wrote the book Alcoholics Anonymous. If you listen carefully to what's written in this book, you're going to hear the Bible all over the place. But they wrote this book in 1939. But between 1930, and of course, there's that famous statement, where they're given their testimony, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And of course, their path prior to coming to Alcoholics Anonymous was reading the Holy Bible. That's what their path was. And as a matter of fact, in the book, Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, Bob Smith, who was the co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, who did the first AA meeting, which was, according to the conference-approved book, Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, a reading from the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, 6, and 7, Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. That's what the first AA meeting was. But one of the things that Dr. Bob says in the book, Dr. Bob the Good Old Timers, is that, talking about the original founders, that it says, we were convinced that the answer and the solution to our problem lay in the good book, in the Holy Bible. And I have a couple things I want to read from the Bible that I've sort of picked out. You know, the dangerous thing about dealing with Scripture, dealing with the Bible, I don't know how you are, you know, I just love Scripture. And the dangerous thing with Scripture is you start picking out stuff, and then you think of something else, and you think of something else. And if you don't stop yourself, you're going to end up reading the entire Bible. You know, there's just so much stuff in here. But there's a couple things I want to pick out, all of which is sort of wrapped around in the concept of suffering. And we're going to get into, I want to also get into something called, something that's near and dear to my heart, something called fear. And first I'm going to read something from Isaiah, the little Old Testament, chapter 40, and you guys probably recognize this, it says, and this is the last part of chapter 40, it says, do you not know, have you not heard, the Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He will not grow tired or weary, and his understanding no one can fathom. He gives strength to the weary. Anybody here ever been weary? He gives strength. I know I was weary when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I was real weary. You know, my sponsor said, you can't rob an alcoholic of his desperation. Everybody has to drink their last drink. I got real weary. Let me tell you something. I've been weary sober. You can be weary sober, too. You know, if you're sober and you're weary, you're not alone. He says he gives strength to the weary. You know, the Apostle Paul got weary. He got weary at times. I want to talk a little bit about the Apostle Paul being weary. I think it was no coincidence that Paul, I noticed Paul was picked out to read Romans 7. And I want to talk a little bit about that Romans 7 paragraph. It says he gives strength to the weary and increases the power of the weak. Even youths grow tired and weary, and young men stumble and fall. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. You know, in some interpretations, it says, but those who wait on the Lord. You know, I can go with either one, but I sort of like, but those who wait on the Lord. Now, some people might say wait on the Lord means serving the Lord, and it may mean that. But I just like the idea of those who wait on the Lord, because sometimes I'm placed in a position of suffering or fear or vulnerability where just it just seems to me like the Lord is just taking too long. You know, it ever seemed to you like you've been waiting and waiting? It's just that this is just taking way too long. I mean, the cavalry should be here by now. You should have been rescued already. You know, you start thinking, you start doubting, you know, maybe the Lord isn't going to show up, you know, and you start, you know, so I like the idea, especially as it keys into James' perseverance, giving endurance, you know, and refining and maturing our faith. I like the idea of the guy who's just waiting on the Job deal. Boy, I'll tell you, I think that blessed be thy name, in a road marked with suffering, that must have somehow come right out of Job. That was his deal. He was blessing the Lord even as he was suffering.
That is Job?
Whoa. That's what happens when you read the Bible. You notice stuff like this. Even youths grow tired and weary, and young men stumble and fall, but those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint. And there's a couple of other things I wanted to read here. You know, one of the things that used to give me a lot of strength when I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and I stopped drinking. I did my slip, and I guess before I came in, I mean, I could be... This is a serious disease. I could be drinking tonight, but I mean, I mean, I don't think so. But you know, I take it one day at a time, and I trust in the Lord. But I've never gotten cocky enough to say I'm cured. But I know this: I put my faith in the Lord, and I rely in that because I believe in that lion deal that's running around trying to get us, trying to distract us. But when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, the drinking was removed, but. You know, when you first come in, I don't know how about you, when you first come into recovery, or you when you first come in to give your life to the Lord, I had a lot of problems. I mean, I just can't believe that people don't come into this deal with problemless. I had a lot of difficulties, I had a lot of problems, I had a lot of worries, I had a lot of concerns. I had a lot of fears going on. And, you know, the truth is, when I stopped drinking, I had a lot of concerns, worries, and fears that had to do with drinking. You know, when you stop drinking, it relieves a whole lot of pressure in a lot of areas. You know, I had a little more money. I felt a little better about myself because, you know, of the drinking. But there's still a whole lot of problems and consequences. And you know something? As they say, and I'll sort of clean it up, they say stuff happens. You know, even at almost 30 years sober, stuff happens to me now. I have stuff and circumstances going on in my life that I can't control. You know, there's stuff that goes on with other people. There's stuff that goes on with their health, with my health. There's stuff that goes on with friends and relatives. There's stuff that goes on with business. And we all know you got to be blind if you don't say there are problems out there with foreclosures and money and people having problems and things going on. And you sometimes sort of feel you're powerless, because we are powerless over a lot of stuff. You know, I learned a long time ago, I'm sort of like an ant on a log going down the river. And every once in a while, the log, the river makes a bend, and the log sort of makes a turn. And I think I'm like turning the log. But pretty much the log is going where the log is going. I can position myself on the log a millimeter here and there to get myself wet. But the deal is, the power I have over my life is very, very small. I mean, stuff we don't even know when we walk out of here whether we're going to make it home alive. You know, my life has changed. I want to tell you something. I've had my life change in a nanosecond. I don't know if that's ever happened to you. Like, you wake up one morning and everything's okay and everything's going okay, and then all of a sudden you get a phone call, you get a certified letter in the mail, you get something, you bump into somebody from out of nowhere, and all of a sudden your entire life changes. You go into the doctor and you say the biopsy shows cancer. You know, the bank calls up and says the check bounced. You get a letter in the mail, it's from the IRS. I mean, just stuff happens. Sometimes you're responsible for it. Sometimes you're not responsible. I mean, the world, it's scary out there. It's scary out there. You know what I've come to realize? Of course, this is a theory. You know, the novelist says most people live lives of quiet desperation. What I've started to realize, you know, I used to be really, really scared because I thought I was the only one who was scared. You know, at first, before I came into recovery, I didn't think I was scared at all. I mean, I was scared stiff, but I didn't realize I was scared. I'd say things like I'm worried, or I'm mad, or I'm anxious, or I'm ticked off, or I have resentments. I didn't know that was all fear-based. I didn't know that worry had to do with fear. I didn't know that anger had to do... I didn't know that depression... I didn't know that feeling sorry for yourself, or feeling like a victim, or feeling like you're... I didn't know that loneliness all... I didn't know that it was all steeped and driven by fear. I didn't know that was the corrosive thread that ran. I didn't know that until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was in here for many years. It was just, I just thought, hey, well, that's just the way I feel. That's just the way I am. I didn't even know I could feel differently, because I had felt that way all my life. You know, my basic thing was, well, if these things happened to you, you'd feel the same way. In other words, I didn't think there was any relief like the Apostle Paul. You know, I thought I acted a certain way because of the circumstances in my life, and there was no way out of it. I mean, if you didn't have money, you'd feel bad too. If you had people treating you like this, you'd feel bad too. And I was sort of like, I had no control over my emotions. I had no control over my feelings. I mean, the more I said, well, I'm not going to get angry, I'm not going to get mad, I'm not going to get, the worse it got. The worse it got. This is, I want to read a couple of things from the Bible. I'm going to read a couple of things from Alcoholics Anonymous. One of the things that helped me out tremendously early on in Alcoholics, I've got to tell you something. Things have changed for me. Thank God things have changed. I'm glad I stuck around. I mean, things have changed. Listen, I don't want to make it sound like 1 year was bad or 5 years were bad or 10 or 20 or something, but I want to tell you something. Things have changed considerably for me. There is a difference between 5 years sober and 1 year sober and 10 years sober and 20 years sober and all that sort of stuff. There's some things I want to read you in Scripture. And you can... Maybe this has to do with the promises. I don't know. It has to do with suffering. It has to do with stuff that goes on in your life. Just in case there's somebody in here that's scared. You know what I realized now? That if you're scared, you're not alone. Because everybody is. Everybody. You know what the problem is? Is there are some people are just better at hiding it than other people. Listen, I want to tell you something. You ready for this? President Obama, he's a pretty cool dude. I think he's cool. It's not necessarily, I'm not talking about whether I voted for him, I believe in his politics, but he looks pretty cool. You know, he looks sort of like unshakable, right? Unflappable. I'm going to tell you something about Obama that you don't know about. He's scared. You know why I know he's scared? Well, you listen, if you were in his position, would you be scared? You would be. You think he's not? You think he's superhuman? He just doesn't show it. You know? I've been in situations where deep down inside I'm scared, but I don't show it. You know, you've been in situations where deep down inside you're scared, but you don't show it. Everybody has gotten the ability to somehow go through life not looking like a blithering idiot, not looking like a thumb-sucking crybaby, even though deep down inside they're scared. Lonely, isolated, feeling sorry for themselves, but somehow making it from cradle to, you know, grave, somehow making it from the morning to the night with nobody catching on. I mean, I had a good friend many, many years ago who one day I got a call, just a great guy, I love this guy, he wasn't an alcoholic, he wasn't an addict, he wasn't anything, he was just the greatest guy in the world. And one day I got a call that he pulled his car off to the side of the road and he blew his brains out. And he blew his brains out. He wasn't even an alcoholic. He wasn't an addict. He wasn't anything. He was just a great guy. You know what I realize now? He was scared. You know what I realized when I started thinking back at it? That he was a great guy. We had a lot of fun. But he never, ever shared anything intimate. And I was a good friend of his. He never shared. It was always joking. He was always jovial. But he never shared. I knew absolutely nothing about his life. I knew absolutely nothing about what was going on with him. He never shared, and you want to know something? I never shared with anybody else either what was going on. Unless I was drinking or drunk. You know, that's why I drank. It says men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They're restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few drinks. I drank because I hated sobriety. Because to be sober to me is to be restless, is to be irritable, is to be discontent, is to feel sorry for myself, is to be scared. And I didn't even realize that. All I know is the only thing that ever relieved that was just a few drinks. I'm not a drunk, just a few drinks. And pretty soon that didn't work, it just got worse. So the first thing I want to read to you is from, you know why? I love the Apostle Paul. Now listen, I know we all focus on, and I focus on, and I love Jesus. We're not supposed to pick out guys, you know, like even Paul goes into that stuff. But I got to tell you something, of all the people, and maybe, I know he wrote 13 books, maybe because he's the one who's most prolific in the Bible, but I just tell you, there's just something about Paul and his writing that I love. Now, of course, non-addicts won't agree with me. I secretly think Paul was some sort of addict somewhere with something. But maybe not, you know, because his language speaks to me. And why is it I like Paul? For the same reason, he's like a human being. He suffers from the same, I understand what he's saying. It's not that I don't love Peter or John or anything, but I understand exactly what he's talking about. That's why I love Paul. That's why when I went to AA, I never got a whole lot, maybe I got something, out of people who were telling me how great they were doing. You know, if people got up and said, I've never had a bad day, I've never had a bad hour, I'm doing great, I'm feeling fantastic, I'd say, well, I must suffer from a different disease you do because I've been 3 years sober and I want to blow my brains out, you know? I want to commit suicide every second, you know? And you're telling me you're doing... I always got something out of the people, I don't know about you, that were going through bankruptcy, or I remember one lady talked one day that her child was killed in a car accident and she was in an AA. I mean, people who were going through incredible stuff. One guy I heard talking, he was dying of cancer, and he just had courage, and he had some... I always got something out of people that were going through stuff and were still focused on God and filled... I said, man, look at the stuff this guy is going through. And he's at an AA meeting sharing with us. So, and one of the things I like about Paul is he's, in my mind, the only guy in the Bible, writing in the Bible, who shares like he's in a meeting. You ever think about that? Paul, the Apostle Paul, confesses all the time in writing. I mean, I don't even share this stuff. Most of us don't even share the stuff he was sharing at meetings. Verbally, this guy is like in writing letters. What a wretched man I am. I'm the chief of sinners. I want to do good, but I don't want to do good. I mean, most people, I think most preachers, wouldn't be writing that stuff. I say, what if the... you know, what if the other preachers get a hold of this? They'll use it against me. Paul was like confessing all over the place how miserable he was, how sick he was. All that. This is a guy who couldn't stop talking about how horrible he was, how bad things were, how nothing worked for him, how he was screwing up all the time. I mean, it's amazing. I don't really think the other apostles were doing that, but Paul did that deal, and I love him for it because I understand him. I love when we read that long deal. I'll probably read it again. Just when we read that all out of Romans 7. I do the things I don't want to do, and I don't think I want. What a wretched man I am! I see two things working in me. I love the Lord, but I'm a slave to the law of sin. I can't get who's going. I mean, it's just absolutely amazing. Here's 2 Corinthians, the thorn in the flesh. I just want you to think about this for a second. This is the Apostle Paul. To keep me from becoming conceited. This is the guy who met Jesus on the road to Damascus. To keep me from becoming conceited because of these surpassingly great revelations, there was given me a thorn in my flesh, a messenger of Satan. Now, I've got to tell you something. I've read this over and over again. Everybody's got theories. Now, and nobody, who knows who's right and who's wrong? There's probably a reason, a good reason, why God chose to make sure that the Apostle Paul didn't say exactly what the thorn in the flesh was. Now, I got some guys in the church, and I love them. They'll tell you the thorn in the flesh was that he was nearsighted. You know, they couldn't stand the fact that he might actually be a sinner and have a problem, even though he's confessed it all over the place. That he might have some sort of addiction or some sort of problem. They couldn't handle that deal. It's got to be some sort of physical thing, like he's got a club foot or something like that. But I don't know. All I can tell you is when I hear a guy says, coming from where I came from, and we know about Paul's personality. You know, he had a type A, addictive sort of, you know, give me the sword, let me kill all the Christians. You know, I mean, he was like tightly wrapped, okay? If anybody would have an addiction problem, it would be the Apostle Paul. I mean, he was out there quick. I want to be the guy who has the most points for killing the most Christians, you know? I mean, this guy had some issues. It says, there was given to me a thorn in my flesh, a messenger of Satan. Now, I know a lot of people that have eyesight problems. They don't refer to it as messengers from Satan. I'm tending to think that this was a real serious thing. I mean, he might not have mentioned it because he was ashamed of it. He probably was. So here's Paul saying, I've got this horrible, horrible thing about me. And it was sent to me to torment me. To torment me. Now, anybody who's ever been an addict, addicted to anything, especially alcohol, knows, has got to have a feeling for what he's talking about. Or maybe married to an alcoholic, or somehow worried about it, or going through any of the addictive stuff that we talk about. You've got to have a feeling to say, man, I know how this guy must be talking about the problem I have. Now here's the deal. I want you to think about this. Three times I pleaded. Now this is Paul. Have you ever seen Paul's journeys, Paul's missions, the missions he went on? What did he go on, three or four? Does anybody, three missions? This guy was unbelievable. I mean, he didn't have a car, didn't have a plane. This guy went all over the place on these missions. I could never hope to do the things that Paul did in his life for the Lord, for Jesus. You know, and here he is. He's got this thing that's tormenting him. It's a messenger from Satan. He's waiting for the Lord to do something. He's waiting on the Lord, okay? And he just asked one simple thing. One lousy thing. This is what he says. And he's reporting this. Three times. I pleaded. Didn't ask. I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me. Now this is the great part. God said, no. Now this is the amazing thing about this deal. And of course this is my own interpretation, based upon my life and what I see here. You know, sometimes you're in a situation. Maybe it's you don't have money. You know, maybe you have a health problem, whatever it is. And you're praying about it, and you're just convinced. You're just convinced that somehow, some way, if you're doing everything you're supposed to be doing, God's going to say yes. He's going to say yes, and you're going to have victory over this deal. But the victory that you're sensing you're going to have over this deal is that the problem is going to be gone. That he's going to lift the alcoholism. That he's going to lift the drug addiction. That he's going to give you $1 million. And you're going to be able to report to everybody, well, I used to be poor, but now I'm a multi-billionaire. You know, because I was praying to the Lord. I mean, you couldn't possibly fathom the fact that, you mean I could have money problems until the day I die? You mean I could have... But here's the Apostle Paul saying he had the one thing that was bothering him the most, that he's pleading with the Lord to take away, and God says, ain't going to happen. I ain't going to do it. I ain't going to take it away from you. And this is what he says. Remember how I said today, I said, I'm an alcoholic, but I haven't had a drink in almost 30 years, but I could be drunk tonight. I understand that. This thing hasn't been taken away from me, and I know it hasn't been taken away from me. Never took it away from me. Never took it away from me. I understand what the Paul, but here's the beauty of it. It says, three times I plead with the Lord to take it away from me, but he said to me, this is what the Lord said, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in your weakness. My grace, one day at a time, is sufficient for you to overcome this deal. My power is made perfect in you. Never did it occur to me that God has me exactly where he wants me. And he's using this thing that's tormented me for a purpose to get me to a different place. See, I want it to be removed. He wants it to be here because it says here, therefore I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardship, in persecution, in difficulties. For when I'm weak, he is strong. For when I'm weak, boy, I'll tell you, when people are weak, when people are suffering, when people's lives are in the toilet, man, they're in AA meetings. They're in church. They're asking for help. As soon as that thorn is lifted, many people, they're out the door, chasing that deal again. Chasing that deal again. Now we got the same guy, the Apostle Paul. And this is why I like to see the transformation in Paul, because this is sort of like what's happened to me. You know, we got that same guy, the Apostle Paul, and this is in Philippians. We go from the guy, this is the same guy, who just said in... Corinthians just said he's pleading, he's whining, he's crying, Lord, this thing is killing me. Take it away from me. It's killing me. He's complaining. He's complaining that this thing was killing him. We go to the same guy, now we go into Philippians. It says, this is the Apostle Paul, I rejoice greatly in the Lord that at last you have renewed your concern for me. Indeed, you have been concerned, but you had no opportunity to show it. I am not saying this because I am in need. Now here's the part I want to talk about. For I have learned to be content. Do you remember when Jesus, right before he left the planet, you know what he said to the apostles? He said, in this life you will have problems. He didn't say, hey, don't worry, everything's going to be okay. He said, in this life you will have problems, but be of good cheer. In this world you will have problems, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. What does it mean to overcome the world? I think it means what Paul is talking about right in here. He doesn't mention the thorn here. What he says is, for I have learned to be content. I have learned to be content. Whatever the circumstances, I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret. He didn't say he got it on the road to Damascus. He didn't say he got it. We know he didn't get it immediately, because way back when he was complaining to the God, he was complaining to the Lord and saying, take this thorn away from me. we got to realize that he still got the thorn because God never took it. Whatever the problem was, he still got it. But this is what he says. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want, I can do everything through him who gives me strength. And that's what I would see in A. That's what I would see in here. That's what I see in my life. Are my problems gone? Not for a moment. I mean, I don't think I've ever had a life where, you know, my problems have been gone, where I haven't had to be concerned. You know, listen, I go to meetings. I've been going to meetings for 30 years. I go to a lot of meetings. I do a lot of stuff. I don't look at it as a problem anymore. You know, it's a solution. It's a blessing to me. It's a blessing. The stuff I have to do to counteract this thorn that I've been given is a blessing to me. I want to know the suffering of the fellowship of the suffering of Christ and the power of the resurrection. These are blessings for me. It says here in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, it says, notice that the word fear is bracketed alongside difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employer. They're talking about the inventory step and the wife. This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. But did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. And then it goes on to say, skipping a paragraph, it says, perhaps there is a better way. This is a better way. I think this might have something to do with the secret that Paul was talking about. The secret. Perhaps there is a better way. We think so. For we are now on a different basis. The basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust... Well, wait a second. Isn't that what the Apostle Paul said God told him? He said, I'm not going to take it away from you, but don't worry. My grace will be sufficient for you. Trust me. Trust me. You're going to have an incredible life, even though you still have this deal. Even though you're an alcoholic, you know, some of your life's going to be incredible. You're going to be lifted up on eagle's wings. Even though you have cancer, your life's going to be incredible. You know something? You got money problems? Don't worry about it. I'm going to take care of that. Why? You're going to take away the money problems? No. But you're going to be incredible even with the money problems. You're going to have an incredible life even with your problems. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role he assigns, just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is a way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is a way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. And what I've noticed in Alcoholics Anonymous and Alive Again, whenever I'm dealing with people with addictions, I've noticed this in my own life, that even though, of course, there's the physical addiction and things like that, as soon as the drinking stops, it becomes very, very clear that it's all about being chock full of fear. It's all about, I'm always going to be alone. Nobody will ever love me. Nobody will take care of me. I can't depend upon anybody. It'll never get any better. It's always going to be bad. It's going to be worse. I remember I used to have anxiety, free-floating anxiety. You know, every once in a while, most of the time, if I was anxious or I was disturbed, I'd be able to pin it on something. Why are you upset? My wife. Why are you upset? My boss. Why are you upset? Money. Why are you upset? The president. Why are you upset? Politics. Why are you upset? The church. I'd be able to pin it on somebody. But you want to know something? Even when I couldn't think, of something to be upset about. The truth of the matter is there was an underlying current of just waiting for something horrible to happen. I just knew that something bad was about to happen to me. It was going to be a bad deal. And I remember one day, and this happened to me, it happened to me when I was a year sober, and it happened to me when I was 7 years sober. It took years for this to go away. And I didn't even get it when it first was told to me. The first time it was told to me, you know, it was told to me in this way. I was in a car, and I was upset. And I was upset about another person in Alcoholics Anonymous that my sponsor was sponsoring, who was drinking, kept on drinking, and we were going to pick him up again. And as I was set, and I was upset, and I was angry, because he was clearly a phony. I thought he was clearly not interested in the program. I thought he was using my sponsor, and of course I thought my sponsor needed my input, because even though we had 15 years, he didn't get this. And I started complaining and whining to my sponsor, why are we even dealing with this guy? I was mad at this guy. I was upset with this guy. I thought we ought to turn around. You know, he's not really serious. And after, you know, really sort of like almost speaking down to my sponsor and railing against my sponsor that we should not go after and help this guy, he finally turned to me and he said, Russell, it doesn't bother me like it bothers you. It didn't really matter to him whether the guy was phony, whether he wasn't phony, it didn't bother him. He had no negative feelings whatsoever. And I didn't understand that because everything bothered me. Are you the kind of person where things just bother you? You ever notice that no matter what's happening in your life, as soon as you get up in the morning, I mean, there's crap going on that bothers you? There's always, you know, it's kind of, I mean, listen, if your sobriety is like mine was, if it's the kind of thing like you're going to be sober as long as everything goes okay, forget about it. Because ain't nothing ever going to go okay. It's all going to be messed up. The traffic's going to be terrible. You're going to be late to work. Money's not going to be there. You know, that's just life. 7 years sober, I was complaining on the phone to my sponsor about my wife and how she was behaving, probably poorly, you know, probably spending too much money or doing so. Who knows what she was doing? You know, I if I wanted to, I could probably pick things to complain about as far as my wife and kids. And I was complaining to him. And after I went through about 10 or 15 minutes of complaining to him about my wife and getting all riled up and angry about it, he said to me, he said, Russell, he says, you know why you're upset? And I said, of course I know why I'm upset. He says, why are you upset? I said, I'm upset because of what I just told you with my wife. I just spent 10 million minutes telling you chapter and verse of why I'm upset. And he said to me, he said, Russell, that's not why you're upset. I said, that's not why I'm upset. He says, no, Russell. He says, I said, are you going to tell me why you're upset? I said, sure. You're upset, Russell, because you're upsettable. You're upset because you're upset. I didn't understand that. I didn't understand what he was talking. You know, to me, this stuff is gobbledygook. When you spend your life complaining to other people about the world and its people, and they're clearly wrong, and you can see it, and you can prove mathematically that your boss is an idiot, and when you can prove mathematically, you know, that the world is unfair, when you can prove mathematically that you're not being treated right, And so you have a right to feel horrible about things. And some guy says, no, no, that's not really the problem. All that isn't the problem. The problem is you. And you know, the spiritual axiom is that whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the problem, there's something wrong with you. Remember how Jesus used to say, remember in Sermon on the Mount? What did he say? He says, whenever you're pointing the fingers at your brother, he said, don't look at the speck in his eye, look at the beam in your eye. What's going on in you so that the world or the earth is causing you to react the way you're reacting? Because, you know, with somebody like me, when I start reacting like that, you know what I say? The next thing I say is, I need a drink. I need a drink. Then it's an excuse to drink. And so what really has to happen is I got to figure out a way not to be restless, irritable, discontented. I got to find that contentment. Now, I thought I was never going to find it. And I can't tell you, because it's the Lord's work, I can't tell you when that happened. And I will never claim that I'm perfect at this. I mean, the day I claim to you that I never get upset, that I never get riled, that I never have a problem, that's the day you'll catch me out of the parking lot cursing somebody out or something. You'll say, wasn't that the guy who was just saying that he never gets that way? You know. So I'm never going to say it never happens, okay? But what I'm going to tell you is this. It happens rarely. It's not like every day, every minute. When it does happen, I get upset. It lasts for a minute or two, and then it sort of goes away. And most of the time, regardless of the circumstances, it's easy sailing. I remember when it first started happening to me. You know, they say it in the promises. It says that feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. It says fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave you. It says these things are going to happen to you. It says it in the Bible. It says it in the good book. It says it in the 12 steps. It says it in the promises. It says you'll get to a point where fear will be dissipated. And you won't drink because you won't need to drink because it never gets that bad. And you'll start discovering something called the joy of living. So I'm just happy to be here. You know, this is all part of it. I know that the AA thing is just a continuation of and a way of getting me into the real deal, which is what Paul discovered 2,000 years ago, what he was talking about, and what works, that power that still works here for you and me and for us. So I'm just grateful. We're just blessed because of the Hey, listen, if you're here because you have some sort of problem or some sort of thorn, you're like blessed because you have that. I mean, I kind of feel sorry for the people that don't have the thorn. I mean, they just sort of like go along, you know, and no thorn. We got the thorn. We got to work this deal. We got to get closer to the Lord. We got to hang on to Him. We got to keep on looking at Him. I figure the reason is because He likes us so much. He wants to keep us on a short leash. You know what I mean? He's like keeping us on a short leash. So I kind of think He's like, well, do you remember what happened? When he came down to the plant, remember who he hung out with? He didn't hang out with the Pharisees. He didn't hang out with the righteous people. He didn't hang out with the guys that weren't the wine bibbers. Remember that? It ticked them off. They were upset. They were upsettable. Remember they were hanging outside of Matthew's house? He was having a cocktail party? That's what he was having. He invited all his friends over. Hey, come on over and meet Jesus. The wine's on me. The booze's on me. And you know what the Pharisees were doing? They're outside. He says, He eats with sinners and drinks with them too. When Jesus came here, He hung out with us. That's where He got all the apostles from. That's where He got all the guys from. All the disciples. So God bless you all, and I'm glad I was here. Thank you.